You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ken Follett has sold over 130 million copies of his novels in the course of his long career. And while he established himself as a writer of thrillers, ever since Eye of the Needle back in 1978, he's also managed to make history come alive in his books. The Pillars of the Earth dealt with the building of a cathedral in the Middle Ages and quickly became an international bestseller. And recently, in a trilogy, he's been tackling nothing less than the entire history of the 20th century. His latest, Winter of the World, is the second in this rather ambitious undertaking, and it's already been hailed as even better than the first volume. It's just been published in this country by Dutton. I'm very pleased that it brings Ken Follett back to our show. Hello.
Hi, it's great to be back.
Your readers certainly get their money's worth with your books. This one weighs in at 940 pages.
Yes, that's right. But people really love long books. So long as the book is interesting. Of course, if a book is boring, then we hate a long book, don't we? Because we feel committed to it. But if it's lively and interesting, and if you get sucked into the story, I, as a reader, love a book that does that to me, a book that sucks me in. And then I can, if it's a long book, I can live with it for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, have you ever considered making a deal in which you get paid by the word?
By the pound, maybe.
This actually is a slightly smaller than Fall of the Giants, but I guess they also have to be big because you have so many characters and you're covering, after all, a century with these three books.
Well, the length of the book should be determined by the story. Yeah, that's the only thing that counts. And with the Pillars of the Earth, you know, it was a story of the building of a cathedral, and everybody knows the building of a cathedral takes many years, you know, 50 years, 100 years, maybe more. And so that story had, you know, it was a long story, it was a long book, and the Century Trilogy is... These are momentous historical events that my characters are living through, and so that determines the length of the book.
Well, when you began Fall of Giants, did you realize that it was going to be the first of a trilogy?
Oh, yes. Quite early in the process, I first had the idea of writing one long novel that would tell the story of the 20th century, and quite early in thinking about it, I realized that it was the idea was too good for just one book, and it seemed very logical to have three books, and each book concentrating on a war, the First World War, the Second World War, and the Cold War, and to have the second book, Winter of the World, feature as leading characters the children of the characters in the first book, and of course the third book will have the grandchildren.
So did you try to plot it all out from the start, or did you just know, okay, I'll do the children and then I'll do the grandchildren and we'll work that out when I have to deal with it?
I spent the first 6 months blocking out the whole trilogy and reading the history of the 20th century and deciding what were the key events, what were the key turning points and so on.
And also, since so much of that history is well known, you had to find things that were not necessarily new, but that you had a special take on, rather than just people saying, gee, do I need to read this book to know that Adolf Hitler came to power? And
that was key. That was absolutely key. The Second World War is quite familiar to people, and I wanted to show readers different aspects of it, things that are important parts of the story, but they may not necessarily have known about.
You follow the history of five interrelated families, American, Russian, German, English, and Welsh. Why those nationalities as opposed to French, Spanish, Italian?
The key question was, can I use these people to show all the important events? All of these characters have to somehow participate in the tremendous events of the 20th century. And so I needed people who not only in their own countries would be part of momentous events, but would also travel so that I could use the same character. For example, I've got a Russian family, but one of the brothers goes to the United States and he becomes a bootlegger and so on. So it was quite a difficult technical question. And the choice of countries was really more about that literary question. What's the maximum I can get out of these characters in terms of where they move around the world and who they meet?
I'm assuming that one of the families is Welsh because your background was Welsh, even though you don't have a Welsh accent. You grew up in London.
Right. Yes, right. Well, I was born in Wales, but when I was 10 years old, my parents, like all sensible Welsh people, moved to London. And so I learned, I was brought up in North London, and that's why I speak with a North London accent.
But I'm assuming the Welsh background is also the reason why one of the incidents here is a coal strike.
Yes, that's exactly right. And my family were coal miners. My grandfather, at the age of 13, went down the pit, as they say, which means he started work as a coal miner, apprentice coal miner. And that's what happens to Billy Williams in Fall of Giants, right at the beginning of the story. And I heard that story told in my family. You know how families have legends that they tell again and again, and one of our family's legends was about how Grandpa went down the pit at the age of 13. And a lot of the material at the beginning of Fall of Giants about the coal mining family comes from stuff that my parents and my grandparents told me when I was a little boy.
Some of these things you had to write about, the burning of the Reichstag, Pearl Harbor, World War II, but some might not be as well known, at least to American readers, like the Battle of Cable Street. Is that something that British most British people will be aware of?
Because No, most British people are not aware of the Battle of Cable Street. We tend to look back on our own history through rose-tinted glasses, and we British would prefer to forget that in the 1930s we had a quite popular fascist party in our country.
Sir Oswald Mosley, in fact, wasn't he his marriage ceremony performed in Germany by either Hitler or Goebbels? Or?
I think Hitler came to the party. I think that was the story. Yes, he was a leading British character. He was in high society, and he was supported by the Daily Mail, which is one of our most popular newspapers. The British Union of Fascists, for a brief while, did very well. And the Battle of Cable Street was a tremendously dramatic event. It was a riot, actually. It was a riot. The British Union of Fascists decided that they would march through a Jewish neighborhood called Stepney, and the people of the East End came out on the streets and stopped them. And there was a crowd of 100,000 people at a location called Gardener's Corner. And the crowd was just too big for the fascists to march through. And that was kind of the end of fascism in Britain. They never really recovered from that humiliation.
Although he continued as an important figure into the 60s, as I remember it, married to one of the Mitford's girls. But why include that rather than a number of other major historical events? Is it because it works well with your plot?
I think it's – I wanted to show that the battle against fascism was not just a German problem.
We had it in this country. The Bund in New York was quite powerful for a
exactly.
while.
And the Spanish Civil War was also a battle against fascism. And in that case, the fascists won.
Now, Mosley is one of a number of important historical figures. Were any of your fictional characters based on real people?
I don't usually base fictional characters on real people. I use bits of people. And, sometimes people tell me something that happened to them or their family, and I'll think, I can put that in a story. That's dramatic. That's telling. But I don't usually base anybody, the entire personality, on a real person.
Now, I can only imagine how much research you had to do to prepare for these books. So many historians have written about the period you cover here from the Great Depression through World War II. Were there some that you found particularly useful?
One of the first books I read was by British historian Eric Hobsbawm. His book about the 20th century is called The Age of Extremes, The Short 20th Century.
He was a Marxist historian.
That's right. He still is, actually. He's still alive. He's about 94, 95.
He visited the show maybe 15 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I invited him to a party at my house about 3 years ago, and he showed up then. He must have been 91 then, and he's still going strong. But what struck me was his concept, The Short 20th Century, 1914 to 1989. And early on, I decided that would be my 20th century, that period.
Now, of course, you're writing it from the perspective of today. So when you went back to some of these places, if you go to Berlin today, you're seeing a very different city than the one you're writing about, for example. But what about our perceptions of this time, especially World War II and the participants? Is our sense of what that was all about very different from the people who actually experienced it? You're writing about people in that time, not today.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people had a strong sense that they were fighting a war of good against evil. Of course, we didn't know. People in the Allied countries didn't know the full horror of what was going on in Nazi Germany, but nevertheless, they had a strong sense that something terrible was going on. And they felt they were fighting against that.
Thing that people have a great bit of trouble understanding is how a vulgarian like Hitler could become so powerful in a country as cultured as Germany with such a rich cultural history.
It's a very good question. The Germans gave us Bach and Beethoven. How could they also give us Adolf Hitler? And that's why the first chapter of Winter of the World is set in Berlin in 1933, and I tried to show my characters are doing their utmost to prevent Hitler coming to power. And the chapter shows step by step, day by day, hour by hour, in some cases, how he did it and how my characters failed to achieve their object.
Did your views of the real people who populate this book, FDR, Churchill, Stalin, Hitler, change or deepen over the course of writing Winter of the World?
I started out with the assumption that Stalin and Hitler, though brutal and cruel men, must have been smart. And having finished the book and done all that research, I don't think they were. I think they were dumb.
But Hitler, clever.
Well, you know, Hitler, for example, in December 1941, Hitler declared war on the United States. How dumb is that? He was surrounded by enemies. He was in trouble in Russia. His invasion of Russia was going wrong. And he made an enemy of the most powerful country in the world. It's amazing.
He'd made an earlier mistake in even invading Russia. If some people have said that if he had simply concentrated in going west through France and into England and then consolidated his power, he might then have considered going to Russia. But by creating two fronts, he...
Absolutely classic situation. The other question you might ask is why not stop where he was? He ruled Europe, and the only large part of Europe that he didn't have under his control, other than the United Kingdom, was Spain and Portugal, the Iberian Peninsula, which was fascist anyway. If he had stopped there, the fascists might still be in power in Europe.
You've said that you think that if FDR... would not be elected, much less nominated, if he were running for office today.
Well, he was too liberal. He ran as a liberal, and he won as a liberal, and he won by saying he was more liberal than the other side, and that probably isn't a winning statement to make in the United States today, I guess. But I think he's a tremendous president, and I think he saved not just the United States but the world from much greater depression than we did, in fact, have.
You began your career as a reporter, first with the South Wales Echo, then the Evening News, which is a national newspaper out of London. Was that good training for writing the sort of fiction that you specialize in?
In some ways. The main thing was, as a reporter, I was writing every day for 5 years, and that's bound to make you more fluent. It also gave me the sense that all reporters have, that if you're persistent enough, you can find out just about anything. So it gave me that determined attitude to research. The downside is that the newspaper writing style is so different. Newspaper readers want the facts fairly briskly, and the novel reader doesn't want the facts briskly. The novel reader wants to be drawn in to an imaginary world and to begin to care about
people.
But
you write in a pretty straightforward way.
I do try to write very plainly, but I did have to unlearn the newspaper style and develop a new style for novels.
Now, you mentioned persistence. You published 11 novels before you produced a bestseller. What was going on there? Had you not figured it out?
You're absolutely right. I had not figured it out. I was learning. I knew a lot about novels from reading, which is how every novelist starts. All novelists are great readers. But there was a lot that I didn't know, and I made all these attempts. I was always trying to write a bestseller. That was always my aim. And my early books were published, actually. So they weren't that bad, but they weren't good enough to sweep the world until Eye of the Needle, which, as you just said, was my 11th book.
And what had you figured out for that book?
Three things for Eye of the Needle. It was the first book that I researched. And since then, research has always been important to me. It gives my books texture. It was the first book that I planned. Eye of the Needle was the first book where, before writing chapter one, I sat down and I wrote an outline of the whole thing, what would happen in each part and each chapter. And the third thing that I figured out was how to slow down my pace. My early books were too brisk. They were too newspaper-like. And by the time I got to Eye of the Needle, I had figured out a better style.
You, I'm assuming, are deep into the third book of the trilogy.
Correct.
And once you finish the 20th century, where do you go?
I'm going to have a rest. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I'm writing long books, and I don't want to leave it too long between publication of books, I'm actually working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day on this trilogy. And I'll probably slow down when I've finished it, but I don't know what I'm going to write about.
A number of your novels have been made into films. Is it strange seeing characters you just conjured up in your mind suddenly in the bodies of real people, saying lines perhaps differently than you might have imagined them when you gave them that dialogue?
Well, the first thing is it's a big thrill. And we've just made a mini-series of World Without End, and I haven't seen it yet, and in fact, I'm going to see it tonight.
It's going to be on the Reels channel beginning October 17th. Incredible cast. Cynthia Nixon, Miranda Richardson, Ben Chaplin, Peter Firth, Rupert Evans.
Fabulous cast. Fabulous cast. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. You're right. It's a thrill, you know, to have really good actors say the lines that I wrote and do the things that I had them do in the story. It's also a little frightening because there's a book that I took 3 years to write that I was so careful about. I've handed it over to a scriptwriter and a director, and I just cross my fingers and hope that they will be as careful. And when they are, it's wonderful.
Just one more thing. Can you tell us about your band called Damn Right I Got the Blues? You play bass guitar?
I play bass guitar. It's a blues band. We've been playing together for 20 years now. And in 20 years, the band has improved. And we're actually not bad. There are six of us. We have five men and a woman who's our singer, a British actress called Floella Benjamin. And we're actually, every Monday night, we play in a rehearsal studio just for the fun of it. And then four or five times a year, somebody persuades us to play at a charity event or a book launch, and we play for an audience.
Maybe we can catch you to play live on our show sometime.
Wouldn't that be great?
Ken Follett, book two of his century trilogy is Winter of the World. It's published by Dutton. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.